right, time for Truth About Markets with Max and Stacy. Hello there.
Hello, Resonance 104.4 FM. And we still have not made communication, by the way, with those engineers at Resonance FM. If you want to have us come down live next week or the week after, perhaps we could do that. I see you're actually wearing your Resonance 104.4 FM t-shirt, Max.
Yeah, I'm a big supporter of Resonance, a big booster wherever I go. I try to support it, boost it, let people know everything that goes on Resonance FM. I was just listening to the network the other day. I forget what the show was. It was mind-blowing.
I remember the Flying Potatoes Through Outer Space show, the sound of potatoes in outer space.
Mm. Well, it's life-changing, isn't it? And when these shows make it out there to the public, they typically will strip naked and start rubbing olive oil on each other and praising all that is holy.
Well, so it's been quite an eventful week. One of the things I want to discuss, of course, is this bizarre notion. I guess you've said this many times in the past, long in the past, that people just don't understand the bond market. And I keep on seeing that, you know, you were on Alex Jones' show about 8 or 9 months ago, and you said next year, i.e. in 2013, the economy would really suffer, begin to collapse again. And he said, put a date on it. And you said, oh, I don't know, like mid-April. But so people keep on saying, where's the collapse, Max? Where's the collapse, Max? Even today. And yet they don't see what happened to the bond market from May 9th when it hit its all-time peak. And now it's like yields have surged. Sometimes up 100%. They're still low by historical standards, but explain what's going on in the bond market right now and why very few seem concerned, except for there's a hard core of anybody who knows anything about the markets is very concerned about that and the REITs and the mortgage rates and things like this.
Yeah, well, that's right. I was correct within a couple of weeks that you had a reversal in the in bond markets, which means basically that the trend for lower interest rates that had been with us now for 30 years has now reversed. So interest rates are going to spend the next 10 to 15 years at least going higher. And that means that debt, everything that's related to debt gets more expensive, including your mortgage, including everything that you have an interest rate attached to. And the ability for governments and corporations and individuals to hide the levels of debt that they have by being able to roll it over at lower interest rates but increasing the principal amount of debt, that has now changed. And so we're going to see more defaults, more sovereign defaults, more defaults by banks. Banks' collateral will be impaired and more problems in the banking sector. So the that happened. I was right. Now there's a concurrent trend where in the case of the central banks, they have become a great waste dump for bank debt to be disposed of. And that worked for a long time, as long as interest rates were trending lower. But now that huge waste dump that is the central bank's balance sheet has reached its capacity. It really can't add any more. So because of higher interest rates, so there's the resultant fallout in the economy. Now, one clear indication of this would be how you've got inflation ticking up. So in America, they say, or in the UK, they say inflation's 2.5%, 3%. Well, if you look at the numbers that are at the that you find in the shops versus the numbers that the government reports, you find that inflation now is running at 8-9%, which is very high. So your purchasing power is dropping by that amount, 8 or 9% a year at the moment. The wages themselves are only climbing less than 1%. So that means your purchasing power in real terms is collapsing by 8% a year. So that means that for you, the average person, loss prices for you are doubling now every 5 to 6 years.
Yeah, and you know, so we're at the end of that 30-year bond bull market, but most people don't understand how this thing in the background of the bond bull market was enabling a very, you know, decadent sort of lifestyle, just forever rolling over debt, never having to worry about the debt because the interest rates were always going lower. But The Economist magazine, you know, unwittingly, I think, pointed out how slow the population is to slow down and change and reverse course. Whereas obviously a lot of the bankers and hedge funds and stuff are fast. They understand what's happened and they're way ahead of the crowd already. But The Economist was pointing out in the UK that since the financial crisis began in 2007, that real incomes in the UK are down 9%. And yet the people this year are they're returning to their credit cards, they're spending, they're accumulating debt without understanding this new world that the interest rates are going to be rising for the next decade or two.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right. It's a generational change in interest rates. And, well, the people who actually have money, who interact with the economy in a real way, they're not the ones who are making a comment about to me that, oh, where's this event you mentioned in April, because they know what has happened and they feel it. If the people who have no money, who have no interaction with the economy, let's say a 12 or 13 year old guy who is on the internet, they would make a comment like that because they have no day-to-day contact with the economy. They're just, you know, they live with their parents or whatever, and they just, the food shows up and they watch cartoons. So they would say, where's the event? So you know, this is a comment made by a child.
Well, so we're going to have Wolf Richter on the show for this upcoming week, this Saturday episode. And he's done an amazing piece about the REITs, the Real Estate Investment Trust in America. And this is where you've seen the huge collapse, the real knock-on effect of rising rates. Because what happened is that, you know, the Fed announced that they'll be doing tapering, and that was the first week of May. And the rates, yields shot up in the longer dated bonds. Obviously, the Fed has kept 0% rates overnight. But so the REITs, what happened to them is they're highly leveraged. Now, these are basically scams, right? They pay out 90% of their earnings in dividends so that nobody is ever taxed on this stuff. But they're highly leveraged, and they take the shares, the income from the shares, and they buy up mortgage-backed securities from the government. Now, with 0% rates and buying the mortgage-backed securities, it's been easy money for the past few years. Well, this year, just last week, one real estate investment trust, for example, had to sell $30 billion worth of mortgage-backed securities in 1 week because of the sudden change in yield.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right. Well, real estate investment trusts, they trade like bonds because it's an interest rate sensitive instrument. And they're very sensitive to interest rates. So when rates started to move up, and the move for the 10-year interest rate from 1.5% to 2.7% on a percent basis is enormous. So it's very jarring. It's a crash. There was a crash in that market, and there was a crash in these REITs. So I don't know what more. What other, you know? I said there last year a crash was coming, and it was a massive crash. $80 billion in bond related investments in exchange traded funds was vaporized in a matter of a few days. So now there is some, as I said, there's a cushion or a buffer in the central bank. So these, because of the banks and real estate investment trust, the so-called FIRE economy, which is the finance, insurance, and real estate economy, is very connected to the banks that are very connected to the central banks. So they have this huge slush fund, which acts as a buffer that tends to mitigate the direct evidence of these things happening in the day-to-day markets. And you have really good proof of this with J.P. Morgan reporting their recent quarterly numbers, which were up sharply. Well, you know, look at JP Morgan. They eliminated the competition through the fake crash of 2008. So companies like Bear Stearns and Lehman Brothers are no longer around. So they're operating almost as a monopoly in the United States finance. They've got $90 trillion worth of derivatives on their books that are manipulated through manipulation in LIBOR, manipulation in Forex, manipulation of the energy markets. So that's, and also they're gaming the central bank by lending back the money that they're being gifted from the central bank through quantitative easing programs. So here you have a parasite, and the tapeworm that is JP Morgan just got a whole lot bigger. So the host, that is us, the real economy, you know, we don't want the tapeworm to get bigger. That's not the idea of good health, a good healthy economy. So, but we just learned that it just got substantially bigger because of all of the tapeworm enhancing policies of the current administration in Washington and the central banking establishment. So that's a bad sign.
Well, also JP Morgan, of course, administers the food stamps, which is a booming market. And they also now administer in many states the income tax returns. So also I want to say that one thing about JP Morgan's earnings, so they reported $6.5 billion in income for the, I guess, the first half of this year. And most of it, a good portion of it, is actually just loan loss reserves. So it's just an accounting trick. They just actually took it from another part of their book and put it in their income. And it wasn't actually real income. It was just fabricated income.
Right. Well, right. Exactly. That goes to the point. Where is the physical evidence of this crash of which you speak? And I say there's plenty of physical evidence in the inflation numbers and the real estate crash, investment trust crash, et cetera. But the top line evidence is somewhat obscured by what you just pointed out. The JP Morgan can manufacture $30 billion in profits by just conducting accounting fraud, where they're moving assets and liabilities around amongst their various special purpose entities, just like Enron used to do before Enron went bust. So here's a classic example. Now, instead of the fallout from a situation like Enron was to change the law so that performing that particular type of accounting fraud, which used to be illegal, is now legal. So JP Morgan takes advantage of that, and they engage in wholesale accounting fraud, or what used to be fraudulent, now is considered quote-unquote legal. And it hides these enormous holes in the finances of the bank and the economy at large. So at some point, which will be way too late for anyone to do anything about it, you'll have, you wake up one day and the stock market will be down 20 or 30%. But that's already, you know, happening now. And those losses are just being hidden from view. So until that system breaks down, and then you have that huge event, and then there'll be a huge political reaction, and, you know, can't speculate what that might be. Maybe martial law declared, like they almost did in 2008, remember?
Well, you know, the other thing that's happened this week, which is I just find truly remarkable, is that hedge funds can now start advertising to Joe Bag of Donuts out there. Now, if you've ever been in the U.S. in the past few years, it's just, you know, you turn on the television. I really, truly, genuinely do not know how Americans can watch television. It's just ad after ad after ad, broken up occasionally by a little bit of a, you know, some sort of drama or comedy. And most of the ads are for erectile dysfunction, shaky leg syndrome, and, you know, various vaginal things. And then, but now into that mix can come the advertising hedge funds. What's wrong with this?
Well, first thing I think as people should know is that hedge funds, they have underperformed the market now for 30 years. So it's just a stupid idea. I mean, the situation is that hedge funds, one hedge fund in any given year might make 50% for that year. But in that game, a lot of people throw money at that hedge fund, and then the next year they lose 70%. And then you never hear about her anymore. They close the hedge fund, and then they open up a new hedge fund. And that's the industry has been like this for years and years and years. It's a money-losing industry. Or you have people like Stephen Cohen in Connecticut, who has done well over the years, but now he's facing fraud charges for trading on inside information. So the alternative would be an index fund where you're just buying a basket of stocks on the stock exchange at no fees or very, very little fees, and you just let that put that away and forget about it, and that's outperformed 98% of all hedge funds over the past 15 years. So one, you pay very little fee and you're going to make money. The other one is you pay a huge fee and you're going to lose money. So why don't you see index funds really advertised on TV? Because they don't need to advertise. People already put money in index funds based on word of mouth and the knowledge that this is the viable way to put your money to work in these markets. They don't need to advertise. Hedge funds need to advertise, just like fake pharmaceutical companies need to advertise and create fake illnesses, to create fake drugs, to advertise why people should throw their money at these things, because it's a hoax, it's a scam. And why suddenly they're being allowed to advertise is the triumph of this banking lobby over this administration, just like the triumph of defense contractors to convince the administration to invade countries and murder innocent civilians. That's been a bravo, bafo performance. Drug companies convinced the company, the policy to create Obamacare, which is a huge cash infusion to corrupt drug and pharmaceutical companies. Now we have the hedge fund industry, enormously corrupt, epically corrupt, in convincing this administration that they need to advertise on TV. So, you know, part of the whole collapse of the that whole, you know, pigsty wedge between Canada and Mexico.
Well, so many, almost universally, the financial press thinks this hedge fund idea is a really bad idea because, again, like what I'm saying, you know, these insiders, people who know banking, well, like, it's very obvious and easy for them to see that the world has radically changed in the last few months because of the end of the bond bull, the 30-year bond bull market. Most normal people out there don't see that. The same thing with these hedge fund things. You know, universally, all the financial press was saying this is the really, really, really bad idea. And one of the articles was pointing out, for example, that in the past 6 months, I'm just going to use representative figures, but they said something like if you had just bought the S&P 500, you know, ETF, it was up 50% in the past 6 months, whereas the average hedge fund was up 5%. So, and yet with the average hedge fund, they charge 2 plus 20. Mm-hmm. So 2% of whatever money you give them, they take as a fee, and then 20% of any profits you make. So you would be down if you were with a hedge fund, and you would be up if you were just with a simple ETF you could buy online.
Yeah. But, you know, people like to be sucked into fraudulent advertising. Fraudulent advertising. No amount of, like I was reading, there's an exchange-traded fund that's based on the Japanese market. The Japanese market's up 17%. There's an exchange-traded fund that allows you to get double whatever the return is on the upside. So the value on paper of that fund should be around 34-35%. However, it's up over 1,100% because people are trading it like just a pure gambling pool, just a pure blind gambling pool, and they're trading it like an insane gambling mechanism. And until such time as it blows up, and then you'll have 100% loss. This is the problem when you have interest rates near 0%, and you encourage people to gamble as the only possible way to escape a minimum wage, you know, prison gulag existence. And it's just more evidence of it, really.
Now, let's move on to the gold market. We're also going to be talking to Jan Scoyles this week. She's done a big report on Chinese gold demand. And actually, a few people have this week. I've seen several reports about it. The Shanghai Gold Exchange. It was really interesting. There was a few data points. Well, first of all, right now at current consumption rate is that China is now taking offline 50% of global production of gold because of Mrs. Wang, the Chinese housewife, is mostly the one buying it. She's buying up huge quantities of physical gold. They also said that, you know, COMEX versus the Shanghai Gold Exchange, that the COMEX has a 3% delivery rate, under 3%. So less than 3% of gold of contracts actually take physical delivery. Whereas in Shanghai, I think it was about 30-35% of the contracts are physically delivered. People actually want to take physical delivery rather than trade it for the cash or roll over the contract. But I really, you know, China's kind of an enigma at the moment because you hear so much shouting about it and yet we don't really know what's going on there because, you know, the sheer quantity of gold being bought is just astounding. But also the fact that, you know, I was reading the Dr. Housing Bubble blog, and he was talking about California real estate. And of the Chinese buyers of homes in California, 70% of them were in cash, 100% cash. And this is the same you see, though, in the London housing market, New York, Vancouver, Australia. Like, it just seems bizarre, this nation has so much cash and so much wealth. Like, it seems underreported. Like, I don't understand where all of that wealth is coming, that they're not buying anything on leverage. They're not levered up in terms of what they're actually buying outside of their country. I don't know domestically, but I do know that the government forced the population to put at least a 50% deposit on homes there, but everybody talks about the housing bubble there. So it seems quite an enigma that I would really like to go and investigate and see what the truth is and just how I know they don't like to show their hand, and maybe they allow this idea that they're not as financially successful as they are, but I don't know. What do you think?
Well, like you say, there's a transformation from the economy all over the world to this gulag casino model. So take in the UK, a good example is you have the Royal Mail. The Royal Mail is a profitable institution. It gives a lot of people a lot of jobs. But the lobbyists and the consultants who run the UK government convinces the government to privatize the Royal Mail. At a time when all the liabilities of Royal Mail have been transferred to the government's balance sheet or the people's balance sheet, and the resulting equity is now highly profitable. So they're going to take the highly profitable equity of the Royal Mail, and they're going to sell it to consultants and city bankers because they paid through corruption to the government in the UK. To go forward with this enormously destructive act. So the purveyors of that transfer of wealth from the public coffer to the private balance sheet, the private pockets of the city consultants and bankers, will result in, you know, 30 or 40 people will make on average 100 to 200 million pounds each on this transaction. That's the money that would have been pay to the 100,000 or so workers over the next 10 or 15 years. That's all being futurized and privatized and given today to these, maybe called, you know, 20 or 30 people, each making 1 to 200 million pounds each. And now they go buy a house for cash. I mean, that's who's buying these houses for cash, or the people who have successfully corrupted government institutions. In the UK, it took, you know, since World War II, it took 40 or 50 years to build up a social cohesion and social infrastructure and institutional infrastructure, and that's owned by the population. Meanwhile, in the UK, I saw a fantastic statistic about how much money the government spends on public infrastructure projects. In the southeast area, which includes London, they spend 2,000 pounds per capita on infrastructure projects. In the north, that number comes in at 5 pounds. So here you have apartheid. You know, it's apartheid between the north and London. And if you live up north, you're getting $5 from the government that you're paying taxes into back in infrastructure spends. If you live in London, you're getting 2,000 pounds. It's quite shocking, really.
Well, but the sad thing about all of this is, of course, as we said from the top of the show, the 30-year bond bull market is over. So rates are only going to either stay flat or rise for the next few decades. It could stay flat like Japan, but again, you can't roll over your debt eternally. So with all these privatization, remember, these private companies can't borrow cheaper than the UK government, right? It's impossible. They can't. So here, you're just adding a cost for no reason, and mm-hmm. you're adding administrators.
Yeah, so the Royal Mail will have to be bought back by the government in 5 years' time. But they're going to spend 4 or 5 times what they sold it for. And they're going to use debt to make that purchase when interest rates are higher. So austerity will have to be increased. We saw this already with rail systems in the UK. They privatized the rail systems. Now they're in the process of buying them all back at huge premiums. We'll see it with the NHS. The NHS is being sold off bit by bit in 5 or 10 years' time. It'll have to be bought back at 5 or 6 times the price that they sold it at. It goes back and forth. Now, there's absolutely no reason for it. It causes huge economic hardship. It strips the economy of jobs. It creates social problems with social cohesion and rioting in the streets. And the very fabric of society is tearing. So you have more of these, you know, what they call domestic terror attacks. That's a direct result of this, of what we're just talking about. So the people who are crying about these events, they have to understand the connection, I think.
Well, so The Economist pointed out when they were talking about the privatization of the national of the Royal Mail, they were comparing it to the National Rail. And of course, anybody who was here prior to 1995-96 saw what, you know, you rode on the National Rail, and the system was, you know, okay, and it was cheap. But now what has happened is that the service has actually declined, and the price has escalated multiple fold over. I don't know how much it is up, but it's at least up 5 or 6 times. The Economist also pointed out that, in fact, the government, the subsidy from the taxpayer, has increased by four times over since privatization. So it's actually costing the taxpayer more. Why? Just like with the healthcare system, because of the administrators, the toll booth operators demand private sector salaries because they have to compete with the likes of JP Morgan, they say, to get the best administrators. So they have a huge administrator class. And actually, Chunky Mark, the artist taxi driver, tweeted a really great image of the UK healthcare system, where doctors, just like gold, supply stays very, very constant, constantly increasing over the past 30 years along the line of inflation of the population. So, and yet administrator class has boomed, the consulting class boomed, and they're all being paid huge salaries, hollowing and yet the same funding. And what they're having to do is extract more and more and more for their salaries, for their guaranteed pensions and all that stuff. And you see that with the National Rail System. It's all this, obviously money is not being put into the service of the actual lines and the quality of the service of the transport. Where it's going is to their salaries and to the increase in debt servicing costs.
Mm. Yeah, and you see it in education, too. I mean, every couple of years, some education minister comes out with a new way to educate the British population, which is going to cost more money and require closing down of all the existing facilities and creating new facilities. And now there are like 4 or 5 different competing education avenues. There's like private schools, charter schools, academy schools, public schools. Mm-hmm. That's what happens when you let private lobbyists and contractors take over a public institution that was working fine by itself, and they start competing with each other. And of course, to compete with each other, you fracture and divide and conquer, and you just create all this hydra-headed nightmare. And the education is suffering. So the average graduate from a British school now is a moron. You know, why is that? Because they don't have a syllabus, they don't have textbooks, they don't have any coherent educational agenda, which is remarkable in a country that all you need to do is study Britain and England history for 1,000 years, including Darwin and Faraday and just all you have to do is know this the history of this country, even on a passing basis, and you'd be better educated than 99% of the world's population. As if Britain didn't never, they think they just sprung out of an egg like 5 years ago, and they're trying to figure out how to educate themselves. Like, what is this thing we hear about Shakespeare? It's some co what is it? It's is it a is it a is it a new reality TV show? I don't get it. I don't know what they're going on about. Where's my free lunch? You know, I don't. It just. Well, anyway, so that's destroyed. So education's destroyed, healthcare's destroyed, transportation's destroyed. Well, all using the same technique. But as we've been pointing out, for 30 years during that process of destruction, you had lower interest rates, which made it profitable to be destructive. Now it's going to be unprofitable to be destructive. So now it's going to get political. So the reason now why they'll say we need to keep destroying the NHS, the rail system, and education, even though it's highly unprofitable due to rising interest rates, it's going to be political. That's where it becomes the government will start to have a message of some theocratic fanaticism that, well, if we don't do this, then we're no, it'll become like the Crusades, in other words. There'll be a crusade against reason and people having decent jobs, because it'll be some higher moral spiritual guidance which is forcing them to continually double down on a bond market rally that stopped 6 months ago.
Speaking of stopping 6 months ago, there was something that stopped 46 years ago. That's my segue into this funny story. Chinese police discover chicken feet for sale 46 years past their sell-by date.
Tell us that, but so it was in some shelf somewhere for 46 years, someone had, and then they finally sold it.
Well, from the first few sentences of the article in the Telegraph, it appears that some Vietnamese smugglers were bringing it in. I don't know. I guess it's from during some maybe, you know, that Americans left it behind at their commissary. It's 46 years old. The Vietnamese were bringing it into China, and that's the story. But that's a different magnitude of, that's kind of like the US economy is 46 years past its sell-by date. It went off the gold standard around that time too. All this stuff from the past that ever rolling over your debts was able to hide and keep down, all the detritus and corpses and stuff are starting to emerge from our past.
I see. Well, when you were talking, it reminded me of this, the Twinkies. You know, Twinkies in America, this item that's sold in food shops, which has some characteristics of a food item. It was going bankrupt because the people working at the Twinkie factory were making more than prison slave labor, so they shut down the factory, and a private equity group took it over, and now they're going to reopen it and sell it to Walmart. And one of the big news items about this rebirth, the renaissance of the Twinkie, is that it now has twice the shelf life. So imagine that, because before Twinkie was it was made almost entirely of chemicals. There's nothing organic about a Twinkie. So the only way you could increase the shelf life is if you just went, well, you want 100% plastic. So I think this is going to be the first food manufactured 100% out of petrochemical, fabricating, and it'll be 100% plastic. Now, when you if you were to, let's say, go down to your kitchen and chop up some plastic bags in your blender, and then add some, let's say, some Paris, some what do they call plaster, into your plastic And then you wrapped it up in a plastic bag with a cowboy shaped person with a lasso, which is their logo. You would have the modern day Twinkie. So, you know, I could save some money there.
Well, you know, the sewage system here, all the pipes under London. I read an article where they went down there and, you know, they explored it. And there's guys who go down there and clean it out all the time. And they said the worst part of it is all of the restaurants pouring down the oil, right? And it hardens. And there's like giant piles of oil, of cooking oil, just hardened there. Maybe that's a good way they should sell it to Twinkies. And Americans don't care. They stuff it in there. They don't care. And they don't even seem to notice. This is going back to, say, the bond market. People don't notice the signs. So, like, when you look at Americans, and I talked to Madge Weinstein about this, okay? Now, in France, you'll see fat guys, big old fat guys, right? But they got fat on eating, you know, grass-fed beef, too much of it, too much foie gras, too much cheese, too much wine. But the fat is all contained. It doesn't hang in weird shapes and like things, growths coming out of their body like the American obese become. Mm-hmm. And even that sign that's not like a normal looking, nowhere in the history of art do you see humans that ever looked like that. People don't, like, that's not a natural look to look like. So those sort of shapes growing off somebody's arms or legs or thighs, that's not normal, and yet they don't seem to recognize the signs. They don't recognize when the tsunami is about to come. They don't recognize when the bond market has collapsed. They don't recognize when the food, the thing they call food, is not actually food.
Yeah, well, so the financial collapse has happened, but it doesn't stop people from being in denial.
Yeah.
Right, so somebody will say, where's the collapse? This is somebody who, let's say, is in the gutter, naked, but, you know, begging for change for a pint of beer and thinking that they're at the Plaza Hotel meeting with Henry Kravis to talk about some leverage buyouts, you know, or one of these people you discussed at the supermarket who weighs 350 pounds, who has fat growing out of their fat, growing out of a fat module in a joint somehow that's not connected properly to their skeleton because it's become deformed from some kind of internal problem, and they're reaching for another 48 pack of Twinkies, and they look at you in that kind of innocent eyes of the denialist, you know, also innocently, and ask you why do you think they're so fat? I mean, it doesn't seem fair, does it? They need special rights. They need to be subsidized by the government because they have a problem, but it has nothing to do with 47 pounds of lard they stuff down their gob every day. And, you know, they're in denial. So here you have in the real estate markets now, or the financial markets are now in a period of denial where there has been an epic change. The bond market is now flipped from being a bull market to a bond market, and you see the signs of it. The real estate trusts are blowing up. You see bond funds are blowing up. There's real carnage on the street, but, you know, for most of the people, it's this. They're in denial now. Like, what? I don't see anything. Oh, I'm gonna blah, blah, blah. So they're just going into this cognitive state of denial. So, but we haven't had in the financial markets for a long time because there's been this historic, multi-decade bull market in bonds. And as Reggie Middleton was saying on the show, you know, he said that, you know, it ended 10 years ago, but it's been kept on life support for 10 years through artificial means like quantitative easing. And you know, if you have somebody in the hospital that's in a coma and you keep them on life support for 10 years, you can say that they're breathing, but they're not really alive. You know, they're brain dead, but they're breathing. At some point, you have to pull the plug because it's too expensive, the hospital, and everybody's like, you know, we just can't afford to keep this dead person breathing. We have to pull the plug. And now that the bond market has reversed, you're going to find this as becomes more and more of a factor. You know, they're just going to pull the plug, which means huge crash in the bond market, which means interest rates go to 6, 7, 8, 9%. If you're on a tracker rate, you're now homeless in this country. And the Shard will never reach more than 20% capacity in terms of its occupancy rate. And the real estate market goes into a vicious reversal, like the real estate markets do. Oh, no, they don't, because we're always on the property ladder, and ladders only go up.
Well, the Shard, they don't care. I mean, if you've ever been to Doha or Abu Dhabi or Dubai, you know, these guys seem to just don't really seem to mind building ghost cities. They're the original ghost cities, but those are genuine. You know, they're vanity projects. I guess they're building projects. I don't know. But, you know, you talked about organs, keeping somebody on life support. You know, there's a real big move in America to make a market in organs. And I think this headline really shows a shocking look into the future. Dead woman wakes up as her organs are about to be harvested. A woman had been pronounced dead by medical staff, and parents had agreed to donate her organs. So this woman, this story has just emerged through, I guess, freedom of information stuff. She was pronounced clinically dead by medical staff following an overdose of Xanax and Benadryl. She had been declared a victim of cardiac death. Doctors had notified her family, and the family agreed to switch off her life support machine. The 41-year-old had, in fact, just slipped into a deep coma as a result of her drug overdose, and her condition had been misdiagnosed as irreversible brain damage. She woke up because of the bright lights, and she was a mother of three. She's a mother of three. The order to harvest her organs, the determination that she was brain dead, came from medical staff at the hospital were unaware that she was alive and demonstrating the signs of brain activity. But doctors never explained to the staff exactly what had led to them to incorrectly believe her daughter had died. They've now had to bring in a consulting neurologist to this hospital to tell them how to tell if a person is brain dead, because a nurse had performed a reflex test on this woman's feet before the procedure by scraping a finger across the bottom of her foot. The toes allegedly curled downwards. This consulting neurologist says, quote, "Dead people don't curl their toes." Mm. But they thought that was a sign that she was brain dead.
Mm-hmm. Right. There's a lot of anxious people waiting to harvest your organs.
Yeah.
Because internal organs are pretty valuable. So, you know, kidneys and hearts, lungs. These things you can't replicate in the lab, really, at the moment. I mean, obviously, within 10 or 15 years, you will be able to create synthetic organs in the lab. But at the moment, anyway, humans have of some value in that their organs have resale value on the open market. So, you know, it's, but then there's a lot of anxious people, you know, waiting, you know, on the sidelines to resell your organs. And you, a lot of people need to be aware of this, because the instances of kidney theft are happening more and more. People wake up and they find that there's a huge slash in their guts and their kidneys have been stolen. You know, and they thought they had nothing. That's the thing. People who have nothing think they have nothing. They don't realize that they do have valuable organs that they can be sold. So if you think you have nothing, don't let that thought leave you unprotected from kidney thieves.
Well, so those people who say, oh, I don't mind the state spying on everything because I have nothing to hide, I think they deserve to have their kidneys taken.
Yeah, they have kidneys to lose. You know, that they don't mind losing a kidney or a lung or maybe, you know, something. What else you got in there? The spleen? I don't know.
Yeah. Well, but this is like, it seems just the epitome of vulture capitalism. You know, this is genuine vultures. Just wait. They can't wait for you to die.
Well, yeah. I mean, up for 30 years, you could make money by repackaging bonds because there was a rally in bonds. Interest rates were going down for 30 years. Like a company like BlackRock, private equity group, all they've done for 20 years, or Henry Kravis or any of these private equity guys, or Mitt Romney They repackage the same thing over and over again and take a fee. Same thing in this, the Thatcher-Reagan revolution meant repackaging stuff that was okay to begin with, like all the institutions that were sold off, and reselling them for a fee. It added no value. They just took value out. They added no value. Now that's all reversed. So these guys who have been sucking on the bond market for 20 or 30 years, these vampires, since they can't do that anymore, they have to look for new markets. And one of those new markets will be your internal organs.
Yeah, but, that's the point, is when they repackage the debt, basically they're taking out the future income, and they've been able to do that for 30 years because they never arrived at the future because they could always roll it over. Mm-hmm. But, this is a new situation that we have not ever, nobody here listening has experienced it unless you're over. No, you've never experienced it because this is, unless you're Japanese, okay? In the last 20 years, they've had a 20-year bear market, 25-year bear market.
Yeah.
But the point about them is they had a massive pool of savings, mm-hmm. like legendary savings rate before the collapse, which has now almost been completely depleted, by the way. And they're just going, the government has always been able to finance their debt for the last 25, 27 years. By rolling over the debt to the citizenry. They had enough domestic savings to buy all the Japanese government bonds being issued. But now they're going to have to go out into the international markets. Now, that's going to be the thing as well with the U.S., okay? So the U.S. has always been able to roll over their debts, obviously, and just actually keep their population much more docile than, say, the Greek or Portuguese or Spanish, because they could just print more dollars because they have a reserve currency, and oil is priced in dollars, and gold is mostly priced in dollars, and commodities are priced in dollars, and people send America stuff without really expecting to get paid. So they always were able to issue new food stamps and just feed the population, where you can't do that in Greece. Otherwise, they would have done that. They would have just issued euro food stamps, mm-hmm. For the population. Instead, they get angry and they revolt and they overthrow the government time over and over. Mm-hmm. Well, the U.S. is going to this is with the bond market rolling over. I mean, is this going to end? Is this privilege going to end now?
Well, on this bond market rollover, also to put this in context for people, when the big crisis hit in 2008, a lot of pundits said the bond market rally was over. And that, okay, so for 5 years, we've had people calling for this bond market rally to be over. Jim Rogers, Mark Faber, Peter Schiff, Max Keiser, to name a few. Just about every single pundit on TV who's not, let's say, working directly with CNBC had been calling for the bond market to be over, rally to be over, and for interest rates to start moving higher. James Grant, another one. And that didn't happen for 5 years. So I think a lot of people are inured to this idea that, this has been talked about for 5 years. It never happened. And, Peter Schiff is a good example, somebody who in the last 12 months is being pilloried because his call of a bond market reversal never, quote unquote, happened. So that's, I think, one reason why people are ill prepared for this, because now that it has happened, if it had happened without the artificial stimulation of quantitative easing, we would be in a post bond bull 5 years already into it, and the consequences would be quite obvious. But we've had to wait 5 years because of the artificial stimulation. Now we're into it. But this is pretty new. This is only now 3 months old. It's only 3 months. 3 years into World War, 3 months into World War One, people were still talking about the Great War, and happy to go to the front. But then a year later and 2 years later, the reality of trench warfare became, was understood. But 3 months into World War One, nobody thought that this was going to be anything but a short-term, picnic in the woods at that time. And we're very, very, very fresh into it. So nobody's really understanding about how this is going to harden and create financial battle lines And against that backdrop, you've got this huge international diplomatic row with the Snowden affair, which is really all of South America has pulled their diplomats out of Europe. Russia and America are back, you know, almost in a Cold War position. And this has caused, again, positions to harden. And for markets to work, you need cooperation. So if all of these economies are going to stop cooperating, that's a negative for market, plus rising interest rates, plus the governments are totally corrupt and in the pockets of privateers and profiteers.
So, well, speaking of rigged markets and trust and stuff like that, this is one of the more remarkable. We save this for last. We've got 5-6 minutes left. And this is a story about, so Thomson Reuters releases the University of Michigan Survey of Consumers report, right? I think it's twice a month. And what they've been doing is releasing it to preferred clients 2 seconds before the rest of the clients of the data get it. Now, 2 seconds might not sound a lot, again, to the ordinary person, and that's not much of an advantage. But remember, high-frequency trading algorithms and machines trade in nanoseconds, so they can literally execute thousands of trades before you can even, in that 2 seconds, before you could even, before you even receive the news. So Thomson Reuters was giving it to these HFT companies and certain big banks 2 seconds before everybody else. But now it looks like they're being investigated by the New York Attorney General. So they stopped offering this data 2 seconds early. And what was the result? Share trading volumes drop after Reuters changes release schedule. Trading volumes in exchange-traded funds that track the S&P 500 collapsed in the two-second interval before the release of the Thomson Reuters University of Michigan Survey of Consumers, after Thomson Reuters this week suspended its practice of releasing the data early to clients that paid it several thousand dollars a month extra. According to data provided by market research firm Nanax, under 2,000 shares in the SPDR S&P 500 ETF, one of the world's most actively traded securities, changed hands in the window that normally sees enormous volumes when the twice-monthly report has been released. So the last time when these guys had access to the two-second preferred window, tens of thousands of shares traded hands in those 2 seconds. Mm-hmm. Here, less than 2,000. So if they can't cheat, they don't want to participate. They don't want to provide the liquidity to the markets.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's the thing. They justify it by saying that they were adding liquidity and that they add pricing discovery and make markets more competitive. That's a complete lie. And they've never been challenged on that lie whenever they make that lie on mainstream media outlets like BBC or Charlie Rose Show or CNBC. No one's really come up and say, you know, you're making a bald-faced lie. But now the evidence is in. It's just been a complete and utter lie. You know, it's like the argument would be that I have a jewelry store and I let people smash the window and steal everything in the window, and that's adding into the volume of my merchant as a merchant of jewelry by letting people steal all the jewelry after they smash the window. That's pretty much what happened. They just been stealing, siphoning off cash. And that money, of course, is why when they say money velocity is low, in other words, the Ben Bernanke or Mervyn King or Mark Carney prints money, and it's not getting any traction in the real economy because it never leaves the banking system that uses it to engage in this type of fraud, where they are paying for data up front and manipulating markets and trading on inside information. So why would you lend money to some startup business or some guy who's in the business of manufacturing bicycles and Woolwich or something? Why would you lend him money and take a risk when you can simply have a zero risk by gaming the system, trading on inside information, working directly with the government to give you government-guaranteed profits? Why would you do that? You wouldn't. So, as a result, you have economic mayhem, collapse, and up until recently, it all can be swept under the rug of a rising bond market, because every time you got into trouble, you repackage the same securities, resell them, longer maturity, and it would all be swept under the bond rug. But now that's not possible anymore.
Yeah, and you know, we've been telling people this for years. The 2009, I think, was the first profile we did on On the Edge about high frequency trading, where we talked about them stealing $100 million a day. Sure, it's only 5 cents a day from each account across the whole US and the world, but you know, in populations they tolerated it because, well, they're maybe one day they might be able to steal 5 cents from everybody as well when their turn at the gulag casino wheel comes. But all of that was possible. It was very decadent to be able to tolerate so many fraudsters at the top. But when the bond bubble has burst, it's going to be more difficult. So
they're going to blame. See, the problem is that there's going to be more rioting in various countries, and these guys are going to blame the rioters for the bond market reversal. So it's going to become political and religious, but the mainstream media is going to let them get away with it. They're not going to come out and say to these bankers when they're on TV pointing the finger at rioters as to why the economy is collapsing, well, you fostered an artificial bond rally for 20 years and made this all possible. It's on you. It's your fault. No one's going to point the finger like that.
Well, that's it for this episode of The Truth About Markets on Resonance 104.4 FM in London. I hope you're out enjoying the sunshine and the summer finally arriving.
Bye, y'all.